factories. I love the rubber balls. I love the ukuleles and the sound of spinning chains. I love the things that people play. Tricycles, I love the synagogues. I love the Lego and I love the Lincoln Logs. I love the fishing lures, I love the plumber's snakes. I love the things that people make.
Good morning. You are listening to These Things That People Make on CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph. And it's raining outside, so you might as well stay inside and listen to the radio, for real. My name is Sarah Mangle, and I am the host of These Things That People Make. And I'm really happy today to be airing an interview with Katie Hagel, who I met on a trip to Halifax a few weeks ago. If you are someone who listens regularly to These Things That People Make, you'll remember that I interviewed Debbie Power of the Happy Face Museum from Dartmouth, Nova Scotia, and I also interviewed Jay Amack, who wrote a book, When I Grow Up, illustrated with plasticine pictures, and they were both from the East Coast. And on that trip also, I made a new friend. Her name is Katie, and she was doing a zine residency at the Robert Street Social Center on Robert Street in the north end of Halifax, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in a bit. But she brought herself there from Philadelphia to finish number 4 of White Elephant Zine. It's a zine that she writes about going to rummage sales and yard sales with her mother in Philadelphia. And I asked her to read part of it. So to set the stage so you understand what we're talking about, she's just going to read from White Elephant number 4. This is Katie Hagel.
I'll just read a little portion of this first entry here, which I wrote in April, and is about a church rummage sale that I went to with my mom at a church called St. Paul's. I got a few books, one real one, an anthology of short stories by North American women, and 2 oddball ones. At this sale, they put the books on card tables up on the stage. It's a church hall auditorium sort of room. At the foot of the stage are all the shoes, lined up neatly at first, but eventually more or less in a pile. One of the jokey books I found is a small saddle-stitched book called Symbols of the Church, Together with Saints and Their Emblems. This is excellent. I like church lore. I especially like the saints and their stories, and I like heraldry and symbolism in any form. I know I'll get use out of this for other zine-y or writing projects. There's a glossary, too. Ablutions, effusion. I grew up Catholic, as anyone who's read this far will already know, and even the modern-day post-Vatican II church comes with an awful lot of documentation, like a car, a glove compartment crammed full of papers you need to keep and sort of understand just to keep it running, for your participation to be recognized. And latter-day, now that my own participation with the church is part of my personal history and can't really hurt me anymore, I like this. I like the idea that there's a university's worth of stuff you need to learn in order to belong to a religion. I've never minded a little studying. The other book is this thing from 1959 called Music for Young Americans, and it's the annotated teacher's edition. There's very little about this book that is American, per se. I think it's just from an era of talking about everything in an oddly nationalistic way, and I find that interesting. The cartoon drawings of children and animals are sweet, and the back of the book gives detailed instructions on what the songs are good for, and even how the children should be directed to sing the songs. Use this song to awaken the children's interest in the rhythms which they hear in the home, on the street, and in the air, says one. And be sure that the children sing this piece reverently in thanks to God. I like the thing about singing reverently. It's just an invitation to faking it. It reminds me of when I was little in Catholic school studying for my first confession. One day I was going over the questions and answers we had to memorize with my mom, and I said in a very serious and hushed way, the important thing is you have to sound really sorry, which I'm quite sure was not in our catechism, but was my own personal take on it. Since this approach made total sense to me, the only reason I remember this exchange at all was because my mom couldn't help it. Her face exploded into a smile. She chuckled and was like, well, I think you're supposed to be sorry, not just sound like it. You know, whenever I have occasion to do that,
you are listening to These Things That People Make on CFRU 93.3 FM. In the background, we're listening to You Are a Fever by The Kills. We have it on vinyl. We have this little 7-inch because I play vinyl on my show now, and it's so much better. And you did hear some crackling at the beginning because I'm just also still getting used to playing vinyl. So Katie Hagel, that's who just read from White Elephant number 4. It's a zine that she writes about going to rummage and garage sales with her mother in Philadelphia. And I just want to read from her bio on her website. You can find it at thelawlawtheory.com. She has published a lot of things in a lot of different magazines, including Utney Reader, Bitch Magazine, Adbusters, the Philadelphia Inquirer, the Philadelphia Independent, PW, the Minneapolis Star Tribune, the Miami Herald, Venus Zine, the Pennsylvania Gazette, the literary magazine 400 Words, and a number of other newspapers and magazines. She's published essays in books too, The Alternative Media Handbook, Zine Yearbook number 9, My Red Couch, and other stories on seeking a feminist faith, and Make a Zine. She contributed research to the book That's Amour, The Language of Love for Lovers of Language. And she has two zines that she does regularly. One's called The Lala Theory, and the other one is called White Elephant, and we're talking about White Elephant today, which is a really awesome zine that mostly, up until issue number 4, has chronicled the things that she's found at the different places that she's gone to all the different rummage sales and kind of the dynamic of the different rummage sales. So we met at the Anchor Archive Zine Library in Halifax because she was doing a residency there, and I'm just going to read to you a little blurb about them. You can find out more information about them at robertstreet.org. All one word. Excuse me. The Anchor Archive sees zines as an important way to make media into your own hands, find a voice for yourself, and find information and stories that aren't represented in the mainstream media and culture. The library is open 2 days a week, Tuesdays from 6 to 9 p.m. and Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. This is in Halifax, by the way. Anyone can browse from our collection of over 3,000 zines, but in order to borrow, you have to be a member and you have to visit the zine library in person. You can become a member by donating $2 or donating a zine. You get zines for 3 weeks and can take them out 13 at a time. We have lots of zine making supplies to use, paper cutter, long armed and heavy duty staplers and typewriters, as well as a computer and the internet. We also teach zine making workshops, host events, and sell zines through our distro. So yeah, check that out, robertstreet.org. And we're going to go back to the interview with Katie now.
You know, whenever I have occasion to do that, like read something out loud, I remember that I should always do that when I'm writing something, because that's the best way to hear bad stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like, if it's too wordy or goes on too long, your ear hears it when you're saying it out loud, and right away you're like, ugh, no, that's got to go.
Yeah, it's true. Well, yeah. It's interesting, because your writing is a lot, like, sounds a lot like talking to you. And that's part of what I love about it, is I'm like, oh, I'm hanging out with Katie. I'm just reading the scene, you know?
I think
you don't read it out loud all the time, you accomplish that kind of feeling.
Oh, thank you. That's good. That's what I want for it to be. Like, just, and that's, you know, that's like a lot of what I love about zines, like publishing anything that I write as a zine. I feel like free, kind of free and easy with it. And I just let it out, and I don't worry about it being perfect. And I don't even really imagine anyone reading it. I just write it to, like, entertain myself.
Mm.
And I think I think in a way that can make the writing come out better, or at least more naturally, you know, than if you're trying to make it sound a certain way.
Yeah.
Make it sound, like, poetic or intelligent or whatever, you know?
Yeah, it's true, because you're just being real. Can you tell the story of White Elephant, like, when you started writing it and...
Mm-hmm.
How you got started?
Yeah, I mean, let me think. Well, the story behind it is I live in suburban Philadelphia, which is where I grew up, and I live, like, literally right where I grew up, just a few blocks away from my mom. And she, you know, she lives in the house I grew up in. So we've remained really close. And we pal around together and do dorky things like this and go to yard sales and stuff. And when I don't remember why I thought it would be funny or worthwhile or interesting to start writing this down. But I did it like four years ago? Yeah, 2006 was the first one I did. And it's become a thing. Well, it's become a part of the process of going to yard sales.
Yeah.
You know, it's like part of the enjoyment of the whole thing, which I have always really enjoyed. And then, so it's fun to look at old stuff. I just like that. And then, you know, it became a ritual with my mother that I really enjoyed. And we'd go out. This summer we did less of it. But, you know, for a good few years now, we've, like, gotten the paper, the little local paper, look in the classifieds, like, see what's happening, and, you know, circle them in the paper and get in the car and drive around. And, you know, end up back at her house for lunch or out at this little, like, diner that we like to go to for lunch. And it's just like a nice way to spend time with her. And it's fun for me, too, because she really likes it now for its own sake, and she didn't before. Like, I think she always was slightly confused about why I would want to paw through other people's old clothing or something.
Yeah.
But, you know, she enjoys it now, and she's found things that she really likes and treasures and has had, like, good conversations with the people we've met there, which I think she was a little wary of at first, or like, I don't think she expected to enjoy it that much, at the very least, but she has enjoyed it, so it's something that is kind of special to me for that reason, too.
So you started writing about it, and then how did you just automatically decide that you wanted it to be a zine?
You know, I can't remember what I was doing, but I think probably whenever it occurred to me, and why ever it occurred to me to start writing this up, it must have been with the idea in mind to make a zine, because that's what I do with a lot of the stuff I write, the weird little personal things that I write. Especially 4 years ago, I was like, everything was a zine. I was like constantly doing that.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think I must have had the idea to make a zine from it. And that first one was pretty short, and I don't know. Yeah, I hadn't really started getting into the nitty-gritty of, like, describing every purchase in detail. I think I still felt like I wanted to keep it entertaining or something, so I was conscious of not getting too weird about it. But I enjoyed it so much the next year, I was like, I just, like, went full throttle.
Yeah.
Like, weird, dorky collector person. Like, I'm going to describe all of these, like, whatever, trinkets and pairs of shoes that I saw and the ones that I took home with me, and so that, you know, the subsequent issues have been longer. But yeah, I guess I always had the idea to do it as a zine. I honestly can't remember.
It's funny, those things, the ways that we hold ourselves back initially, eh?
Mm, mm.
And we say, like, I don't want to bore anybody, you know.
Totally.
I don't want to take up anyone's time. I want to do this little thing, and then I want to run away. And it's just funny how, like, sometimes there's this layers of, like, letting yourself just go for it. And, of course, people appreciate reading you go for it, you know?
Well, that's it. I mean, yeah, that's something that I do a lot of. And then, in retrospect, think, well, that was silly. Like, I needn't have worried about that in quite the way that I worried about it anyway. Like, doing this at all, you know?
Yeah.
Like, making zines at all, or going to yard sales and writing about it, you know, what else would it be but, like, something odd and something I should just, like, indulge in and encourage other people to think about and enjoy if they want to. There's really no need to feel self-conscious about it. Once you've decided to embark on something like this, you may as well just really do it.
You are listening to These Things That People Make on CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph. And in the background, you're listening to The Kettle Black, another person who just goes for it. If you've ever seen him play a show, well, it's hard to describe, but he sets up the whole stage. He brings his own monitors and his own everything, and it's the light show, and it's amazing. He's based in Hamilton. And this comes from a 7-inch that he put out, and it's called Ship Shapes, this song. And we're interviewing Katie Hagel today about her zine, White Elephant. And I'm just going to go back to the interview.
It's funny because that's, like, really in the spirit of yard sales, right? Like, it just makes me think of the couples I've seen where, like, they're driving around in a truck. They show up at the yard sale, like, early, and they're looking for a specific thing, you know, like bicycles or, you know, mason jars. And one of the pair is like, honey, do we really need another stool with one leg? And the other one is like, yes, we do. You know those people?
Mm. Totally.
You know what I'm talking about? It's just like one of the people in the couple has decided, like, I'm going for it. And the other one is like, but why? You know, it's something so beautiful to me about the people who are like, I need these things. This is,
This
is the thing that I'm doing.
I mean, and there's different ways of scavenging like that too, right? Like, because I did it with you in Halifax.
Yeah.
I see people doing it here. People who have cars do it in the neighborhood on, like, the bulk pickup or trash day or whatever, drive around at night looking for good stuff. I mean, just now, coming home, I hopped off the bus and I was walking a couple blocks to my apartment building, and, like, there was this stash of records being thrown away. Like, the are in like I pulled a couple of them out, and they didn't seem to be all marked up or scratched up, so I was like, oh, these are in pretty good shape. So I brought home some Hawaiian music and an opera. What else do I have here? Oh, an evening of Tyrolean folklore.
Cool.
So I have some new stuff for my cat and I to listen to. But yeah, I mean, when I go looking for stuff, it's usually with a totally open mind. Sometimes I think in the back of my mind, like, I really could use such and such.
Yeah.
So it'd be nice to find something that fits the bill. But I mostly do not treat, like, yard sailing and trash picking as shopping, exactly. It's more like, you know, let's go look at all this weird stuff.
Yeah.
And see what happens.
In your zine, you make a distinction between the rummage sale and the yard sale, and I was wondering if you could talk more about that.
Okay. We started out going to yard sales, because that's what we would see advertised in the paper, you know. And we would also, though, go to the church rummage sales, not exactly a flea market, because I think of that as something else again, but like a church rummage sale in the basement of the church, like a jumble sale or whatever, you know, people call them different things.
Yeah.
Where you, like, really are, the stuff might be loosely organized, but at least the clothing is just in big heaps on tables, and you just pick through it. And we realized after a summer of going to all these different things, and they continue into the autumn, too, at least those ones, too, we like those better.
Mm.
That is more like a thrift store. It's like a really cheap thrift store.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the same stuff, like weird old plastic jewelry and books and crockery and that kind of stuff. But it's, they sell it, and I, you know, honestly, and my mom and I have said this, like, you almost wonder why they bother. It's like, it's got to be some, like, Protestant frugality gene that keeps them doing it, because how can they make any money? Like, I've bought, like, a paper sack stuffed full of dresses and hardbound books and jewelry, and paid a dollar for all of it.
Yeah.
Why did someone, and then, like, you know, so you see these, like, older women who have probably been the ones to haul all this stuff into the room and sort through it and price it and everything. And then when I go up, you know, when I go to pay them, they're like, they carefully tally it up, and they're like, that'll be 62 cents. Okay. And it's really fun for me, but I sometimes wonder, like, can this be worth it for them? I think they must enjoy it. I think they must enjoy it in the same way we enjoy it.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, because it's social, you know, they get to sit around and drink coffee and chat with each other and then watch all the people come in looking at things, and we always have nice conversations with them too, and everyone else must do the same. So, I mean, it must just be part of, like, the social life of a church. That's my thinking, because I doubt that they are able to raise much money.
I want to talk to you about writing about love, because in number four, the most recent issue, I think you do a really amazing job about writing about loss and feeling sad about loss.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you write really well about love and relationships. All of a sudden, like, White Elephant zine becomes about like all these other things. And I guess I just want to hear you talk about that kind of transition and what it means for you to write about those other parts of your life.
Yeah, okay. I didn't mean to do that at all. Well, first, okay, it's interesting, because this is a subject that I haven't really tried to write much about before, the whole idea of, like, writing about love or writing about a particular person in that way. I've, like, always shied away from it. And partly because I'm private in some ways, but also because I didn't think I could do it without it being hokey. But this time I didn't care if it was hokey. You know, it's like, I guess it's that thing you were saying again of, like, holding yourself back and then eventually just figuring, like, oh, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm just going to try it anyway. And, you know, this scene, well, so I ended up writing the bulk of it during that residency in Halifax, but I sketched the outline of it as the summer went, because if I don't, like, write down a lot of notes about something at the time, I won't remember.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up being a really interesting way for me to chronicle this relationship that I'm in, because I started writing about it before it even really was solidified as a relationship. It was just this person that I was falling for, you know. Mm. So, like, when I first wrote about him, that's, I think that's kind of what I said. Like, and I seem to be falling in love.
Yeah.
And because that was so present in my mind as I did this stuff all through the spring and summer. And this issue is really different from the other ones, because the other ones are, like, me and my mom and my cat.
Yeah.
I come back home, and it's me and my cat. But, and that's all I write about. But then this year, I actually went to yard sales with this guy, with Joe. And so, like, I ended up, yeah, kind of writing a lot about that as I was trying to write about the original thing, which is something I really like about memoir-style writing in general, that it can be, it can have a starting point and actually be about a whole lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
You know? You can kind of go off on the tangent, but this I felt like I couldn't avoid doing because it was so present in my mind. Like, I'd met this person, we were on the phone all the time, you know, I would like be meeting up with my mom to go to, on one of our outings, and I would just have spoken to him, and I'd be sort of glowing with the idea of, like, when I would see him next. And even that little passage I just read, I'm remembering looking at it now. That's the first one. So that was April, and that was the first one that I wrote for the issue. And I bought something at that rummage sale for him. It was like a little sack of buttons, because he likes to sew and make clothing and stuff. And I was like, oh, I'm going to get these buttons for him. It'll be like a nice little gift, you know.
Mm.
And, yeah. So I don't know. So I just ended up writing about it without quite meaning to, and then I realized I was writing about it a lot, so I just sort of embraced it and decided to keep on doing so. And I showed it to him. I asked him if he wanted me to show it to him before I, like, published it.
Yeah.
And he said that was not necessary. He's like, no, it's cool. I'm interested to read it, but I don't need to, you know, oversee it at all. And I think he was pleased with it when he finally did read it, but
It's going to be hard to convey to the listeners, like, what I actually mean by writing about love, because I think part of what I like about it so much is that you write about sadness and anger and feeling things without knowing why, which is a feeling I relate to really strongly, and I think a lot of people do, but I don't know what I normally read. You know, it's hard to be like, what I normally read, like, I felt compelled to be like, people normally read, like, write, like, I felt angry because blah, or I felt sad because blah. But I don't know that that's necessarily true, but I think what you wrote well is this kind of, like, how you felt and how you acted and not necessarily ever explaining it.
Yeah.
But just explaining, like, then what happened, you know? And
that's
really, like, beautiful and really, like, accurate, I think, to how so many of us live our lives, where we're like, I looked at this person I'm dating and I felt weepy, you know, I felt really pissed off, but, like, I had just traveled really far to see them and I also didn't know why I felt those things, you know?
Yeah. That's interesting. I take that as a compliment and I thank you.
Yeah. You're
and
welcome.
I think it's like, if I had to think about it, I would say I probably didn't used to be able to do that in my writing or in my head, because you feel like, it's uncomfortable to feel a certain way and not know why. So I think we, like, try to explain things to ourselves in a way that is may or may not be accurate.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, like, when I was younger and I was writing things, I felt the need to sound, like, authoritative in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
Or just, like, on top of myself and on top of my life in some way that I wasn't. And, you know, that is one nice thing. Like, as I've gotten older, it's like, well, whatever. I'm really far from perfect, and so is everybody else.
You are listening to These Things That People Make on CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph, and you've been listening to the lovely voice of Katie Hagel, who writes a zine called White Elephant. And I encourage you to get a copy. White Elephant number 4 just came out.